So with that, I can tell you a little bit of what happened to me. So I was exposed to Christianity as a child. My mother took me to church, and I was a Thomas. You told me that you had seen God, but I didn't see God. I couldn't get it. There were stories about something that happened, you said, in history, and I couldn't relate it to my own life. I couldn't see what these old stories had to do with me. And I wanted to believe. I wanted to believe what the kids around me in Sunday school seemed to believe. I could see that people took comfort in this stuff. I just couldn't buy it. And my grandfather was a scientist. My dad was a scientist. And I don't want to blame them, but I think I kind of picked up on, and my dad was an agnostic, and my grandfather. And I think I picked up the common misunderstanding that if you're scientific, you can't believe in God. And I used to cross-examine scientists for a living on the scientific method. So I'm familiar with the scientific method. My goal was to prove that they didn't follow it, so they didn't get to testify against my clients. And the scientific method says that we are going to treat things as accepted scientifically. If they're repeatable, we can do controlled experiments, we can understand how it works. And as you can see, as soon as you hear those things, God is not going to let us catch him in our butterfly net, put him in a bell jar, and do what we want. You know, we'll never understand how God does what God does, because his ways are not our ways. It's an intelligence and a power so much greater than ours. We'll never understand God. We can't make God do what we want. Thank heavens, right? Because every football game, there's each side's praying for. I mean, it doesn't work. God doesn't do. We can't make God repeat itself. We can't explain how God does what. So God will never. We can't move God into the realm of scientifically accepted things. There have to be some way that you experience God for yourself and say, maybe the scientific method can't wrap its arms around something so mysterious and so magnificent, but I've felt God. I've seen God. I haven't put my hands in God's side, but I've felt God. And that's, so when we tell our stories in AA, one way or the other, we generally talk about how we experience God. And I didn't hear that in church when I was a kid. And that is how AA, time and time again, helps people move from, I don't believe in God, and therefore I don't think there is a God, to, well, wait a second, there's something going on here. There's something mysterious going on. So what happened to me is I considered myself an atheist or an agnostic. And I was more of an agnostic. An atheist says they can prove that there is no God. That takes a lot of work. That's trying to prove a negative, and you have to read books and argue logic, and I didn't want to do that. An agnostic says, I don't believe that there's a God. I'm not saying there isn't one. I just don't believe it. A Thomas, right? And so I was a Thomas, and I came into AA, and there was no place else to go. I was dying. I was 33. I still wore a white shirt and a tie and worked as a lawyer, but my hands shook, and I had something called peripheral neuropathy. I couldn't feel my fingers anymore. Sometimes I would hear voices that the noise in my head was so loud. Sometimes I'd hear a voice that wasn't there. I couldn't remember stuff from day to day, because I could not stop drinking. I couldn't not drink, and I couldn't. When I started, I could not tell you what was going to happen. If I was going to have two drinks or be out all night and getting into other shenanigans. So when I came into AA, I was a Thomas. I didn't believe in God. I didn't come for God. I came because people said that there are people there that drank like you drank, and they stopped, right? And I came in and I heard these stories and I felt something that I had not felt for 15 years. I was 33 when I came in. And I'd been drinking for 20 years. And somewhere around college, I lost hope. I got very dark and cynical. I saw that there were people that had been where I had been. They had been in the prodigal son's pigsty. They had been enslaved in a foreign land, and they had gotten out. And there was a lightness about them. They could laugh about the craziness of their life. There was a joy about them. And I wanted that. I was like a moth to a flame. Like, there is a way out of this hell. I didn't think there was. I thought the only way out was to get dead. And I was giving that some thought. And there was a way out. And these people were going on. They were living lives. They were getting married. They were staying married. I was having trouble with that. They were raising families. They were having jobs. And I wanted that. And I got about 2 weeks of reprieve before I'd been going to meetings for about 2 weeks. And I never noticed anything about God, that this program had the least thing to do with God. People were talking about it every meeting. It's on the steps up front. They're reading how it works at the beginning. I never heard the word God. I had no idea it was a spiritual program, because God is merciful and God loves Thomases. So I was about 2 weeks in, and I said something. I went to a meeting, and I said out loud for the first time at the meeting, I said, my name, as people do in AA, I introduced myself as an alcoholic. I said, my name is Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. And that dark force, that cunning, baffling, powerful, which in our church we call that the accuser, or the father of lies. The father of lies does not want me talking about my deep, dark secret in public, because that secret holds me apart from everybody. You know, I got to go home and get hammered at night. I got to take the phone off the hook because I don't know what I'll say. I got a hangover every morning when I wake up. I got a big secret. Me and my disease have a big secret. So the accuser is all over me on the drive home from that meeting. Like, you don't belong with these people. You're not really an alcoholic. You have a job. You're just saying that because you want to fit in. These people, they're nice people. You want to fit in with them. You're lonely. You have no right to be there. You're not an alcoholic. And so I got home, and the disease is working on me. And I'm thinking, well, if I'm not an alcoholic, you know, maybe I'll have a drink. Which is exactly what, you know, that voice wants me to do, right? It wants me alone, causing misery to myself and others. Doesn't want me helping people. And so I had in my pocket, there was this guy, Chuck, who had sort of taken me under his arm at the first AA meeting I went to. Chuck had appeared in my apartment 2 weeks before that meeting to paint it. I'd just gotten his name randomly. You know, what are the odds, right? So he shows up, sees me at the meeting. He'd watched my scotch bottle go down every night, which he found humorous. And I show up at this AA meeting, he comes over and takes me under his wing. And he's taking me around to meetings saying, you know, go to this one on Tuesday night, go to this one on Wednesday. So he'd given me his phone number, which I thought was kind of creepy that a guy would give me his phone number. But now I'm alone in the apartment. And the voice is starting, why don't you have a drink? And I know what happens when that voice starts, right? Once that obsession starts, it starts to loop. And after a while, it drives out every other voice. And I'm going to have a drink. I mean, I've been through this thousands of times. I know what's going to happen if that voice doesn't get interrupted. So I pull this piece of paper out of my wallet, and I dialed Chuck, and it was like a 500-pound telephone, you know, lifting that telephone to dial. And Chuck picks up, and he had a big bass voice, and he's talking to me. And I spent about, you know, how are you? I'm fine. And I spent about 10 minutes beating around the bush and finally said, Chuck, I was just thinking, you know, maybe I'd have a drink. And Chuck said, I have three suggestions for you. He said, why don't you, do you have some chocolate in the house? And I said, yeah, I have chocolate. And he said, eat some chocolate. And I'm thinking, Chuck is a smart guy because chocolate, I know, has, because I'm a smart guy, chocolate has something called serotonin in it. And that's a drug. And I know if you're nervous, nothing helps like a drug. My whole, you know, I've been trying to get my blood chemistry right for 20 years. And I just keep missing the mark. But eat chocolate, that's a drug. That'll make me feel better. So, okay, good one, Chuck. What else you got, you know? And he says, and if that doesn't work, take a hot bath. And Chuck's a genius. A hot bath, I know because I'm a smart guy, releases endorphins, which is a feel-good drug that your body makes after a good workout. So I'm thinking, more drugs? I like Chuck. You know, I'm glad I called. And then Chuck says, get on your knees and ask God to stop you from drinking. Oh, boy. Thanks, Chuck. Click, you know, because now I know how the God people are. Like, once they start, you know, once they're out of the closet, there's no stopping them, right? So it's like, okay, I've milked all the useful information I'm going to get out of Chuck, you know. So he's one of those. So I ate some chocolate and it helped a little bit. And then I took the tub and that helped a little bit. And then the voice started coming back up again. And I'm done. I'm sunk. I know exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to be like a zombie. That voice is going to start looping. I'm going to be out the door. I'm going to be down to the deli. I'm going to buy a six pack of beer. And I'm going to be three beers into that six pack before I realize that I'm drinking again when I swore I wouldn't. And some people know what that's like. Some won't. Some maybe have done that with sweets. You know, I'm not going to eat that. And all of a sudden, there you are, you know, with a Haagen-Dazs and a spoon. I know that one too. But I know what's going to happen. So, but I don't believe in God. But I am out of options. My back is against the wall. So I lived in a six-floor apartment. I couldn't quite get organized enough to get shades. So, but it didn't matter because it was on top of a hill up in Westchester. And there was nothing else six stories around except a church steeple across the way, oddly enough. So there's nobody can look in the window. But I was afraid that just on the chance that somebody had climbed that church steeple and might be spying on me, I did not want anyone to see what a fool I was about to make myself. Because, you know, over the years, when I found I couldn't have God, I didn't want you to have God either. You know, if I can't have it, I don't want you to have it. So I would ridicule people. I was a Paul, you know. I ridicule people for their infantile, primitive beliefs, you know. And if my friends were Catholic, I'm all about telling you about the pedophile priest. You know, whatever I could find. You know, I want to talk about the Spanish Inquisition. You know, every time Satan has infected the church and attacked the church, that's what I want to talk to you about. So, you know, I was that guy. I was not a nice man. And I was not a happy man. So I'm out of options, right? So I realized that I'm going to go say a prayer. And so I walked over. I didn't have shades, but I got down under the level of the windows just in case somebody had climbed up on the church steeple because I did not want anyone to see what a fool I was about to make of myself. And I got down on my knees and I said to the rug, because I didn't believe in God, I said, please help me. And I didn't expect what would happen because I didn't believe in God. But God believed in me, right? God believes in Thomas. So what happened to me was I was on the floor, and I just felt like everything was going to be okay. All the loop, all the worries, all the fears just drained out of me, And there was a softness. There was a softness to the time, a softness to the light, which I can't explain. And I can't really paint a word picture of it because it's different than anything in our world. And I felt this, and I slept on a futon down on the ground, and I rolled over onto the futon, and I felt like somebody was stroking my back. And it didn't freak me out. I just felt like everything was going to be okay. And what happened? So that was 30 years ago. I had not been more than 2 days without a drink in 20 years. I haven't had a drink. I haven't wanted to have a drink since that night. Amen. I haven't had to fight it. I just... So it doesn't happen for everybody that way. There's some of us are so stubborn we just have to be hammered over the head. The next morning I woke up and the voice is back saying, "Oh, you're probably detoxing." Well, I haven't had a drink in a couple of weeks. No, it's probably detoxing. It's probably hallucination. You're probably trying to. You just want to fit in with those people, you know. You just made this up, and it's like, no, that was it was real. Like I know, I'm a child of the '70s, man. I know a hallucination when I'm having it. I used to pay good money for those, you know. And it was real. It was physical. It touched something. It touched my soul. And so. I think, honestly, that opened up everything. I was like, oh my gosh, I was wrong. I was wrong. I was wrong. There's something mysterious. And I was 2 years away from becoming a Christian, but I wanted to know what happened, what that was, and how I could get closer to it. And, you know, I took a path to get there. I went through Zen and Eastern mysticism, and then God sent this angel named Alice Chang into my life. And, you know, she said, I don't care if you believe in Jesus and Christianity, but I do, and I'm going, whoever marries me, whoever that might be, is going to go to church with me every Sunday, sit on that, and I kind of wanted to marry her, like in a big way. So I started going to church, and it was a different kind of church. It was horrible. It was a, you know, fire breathing, like it had the God that does not want you to go to heaven, right? If you don't do these 19 things perfectly, you're done. I'm you know, it's that kind of God. But I started reading the Bible in order to argue with her preacher, as lawyers will do. And I just started seeing Jesus, and it had a power and an authority to me that I wanted to follow Jesus, and he became my pole star, and so that's what happened to me. And so if I were leading a meeting, I wouldn't go all the way through that probably into Christianity, because I just want to help somebody else get from there is no God to wait a second, there's something going on, right? I don't want to make them think they have to go all the way at once. You know, because I love them, because I was them, right? And I'll say, if I finished, I would say, this is just me talking. I don't speak for AA. If what I said doesn't help you, you come here to 50 meetings, you can hear 50 other people, right? And somebody's going to say something that'll help you find a power greater than yourself. And what that happens is. So AA is very careful and humble about what it's trying to do, right? AA says we want to help you find a power greater than yourself that will help you overcome your addiction, right? But you can imagine what would happen if they tried to go the next step and tell you what that power starts to look like. Are we going to have a Christian God? Is that going to be a Catholic God, or is that going to be a Protestant God, or is that going to be an Orthodox God? And then What about if you're Muslim and you're dying of alcoholism? We're going to make you confess Christianity in order to get the... So AA goes only this far and stops. As the founder said, we're only operating a spiritual kindergarten in which people are enabled to find the grace to go on living to better effect. Each person's theology has to be their own quest, their own affair. So AA is not trying to become a religion. It's not trying to compete with a religion. It's just saying, it's just trying to move people from there is no God to there's something going on. And what, but it does in the 11th step encourage its members to go beyond and try and move closer to God. And if, with the next slide is from AA's 11th step, and AA's not opposed to religion. You'll hear people in an AA meeting who will give voice to the trauma they may have experienced in an abusive religious environment. Right there will be people that will come in that will say, "I hated the church. It was a holy roller church. It was this church. It was that church." Some of them, if you check back in 10 years, may be back in the church, right? So they'll get voice to that. But AA itself says, be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer, right? We're just kindergarten. You can go on and get a PhD in theology, right? We're not it. We're just trying to help you find a higher power and stop drinking. And what happens is... if you can, if you've been like me and like a lot of people, if we go to the next slide, if you know that your life, your very life, and everything good in your life depends on your relationship to a higher power, and we know it because we tried life without it, right? We know where that goes. We know where we are without God. What you get coming out of AA is you get seekers, right? I want to get closer to this God. I want to know more about this God. I want to find the source. And so you get Thomases. They've seen that there's God, right? Now they want to know more about it. And you know, Jesus loves seekers, right? He says, if you seek, you're going to find. If you knock, the door's going to open, right? If you ask, you'll receive. And what I've seen happening here, I just want to say, I've been going to AA for 30 years. I've been a Christian for 28 years. And when you find something wonderful, you want to share it, right? And I found something wonderful. I wanted to share it. But I have never, in 28 years of being a Christian in AA, seen seekers coming out of AA, knocking on the door of the church I was going to, seeing that door open and seeing the welcome mat out the way I've seen it here in the last few months, right? So I think the church can take pride in being faithful, right? We were faithful. We stood at a turning point a few years back where we had to make a decision whether to surrender this space and move into a school because we couldn't afford this space. It was falling apart, and it was drawing all our energy into just trying to stop the roof from leaking and do the latest repair, right? But this church was faithful, and it prayed, and through a long process and a lot of hard work by a lot of people and God working through people who were faithful to him, this church became a beautiful and a miraculously short time when you look back at it in hindsight. This church turned into this beautiful facility, this welcoming facility. It's even got air conditioning in the summertime. And the talents that were buried beneath us, were that strong box was opened, and the church became self-sufficient again. And we held this space. The church made a decision to hold this space for God. And they did. And they have cradled AA in this space, right? AA stands separate. But there's no way they could pay the market rent here. The church subsidizes them. You know, we do that. And they have had, I've heard so much feedback. that between the face of our church that they run into is Jeremy and Pastor Willa, right? And I've heard so many people say that face is so welcoming and so loving now. You know, Pastor Willa's really nurtured the group. She comes out. People are going into her office after a meeting to talk with her. People are showing up at Bible study. I've never seen anything like this. And, you know, we have a great commission, right? And we're reaching people. We're not taking market share from other churches when this happens. We're not moving believers from here to there. People are coming in that have had no exposure to church ever. That's an amazing thing. That's the Great Commission, right? And so I'm kind of finished, but I just, you know, when people come in, when they get here, it's a change, because we were in a state of preparation before, right? Mature Christians. This was a lot of Pastor Jones's vision, was that there's going to be a day when people start coming in here, and there's going to be a lot of people that are new to the faith, and we're going to need strong pillars, strong, mature Christians to be the pillars that hold this beautiful faith of ours and can handle a lot of new people coming in that are excited and they're learning. And we were faithful to that vision, right? And Pastor Jones matured us as Christians, and we're strong, right? And now the message that is reaching the people that are coming in, it's not preaching to the converted now, right? There's plenty of red meat there for a converted person. I mean, I've had huge shifts in my beliefs and helpful shifts from Pastor Willa as a longtime Christian. But the message is we're preaching to the newcomer now. There's a message for the newcomer, which says we have something. It means something to you. These are 3,000, 2,000 year old scriptures, but they mean something to you. We know how you feel, and Jesus knows how you feel, and God knows how you feel, and we have something here for that. So that message, I think, is coming across loud and clear. I think it's an incredibly powerful time in this church, and I think we're just beginning to see it flower. And I'll finish this last thought. I was sitting here on Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving weekend's a little different mix of the church because a lot of families are away and so on and so forth. But I looked around, I counted the people in the church, and I'm not going to break anybody else's anonymity, but I looked around and 10% of the people that were here on Thanksgiving Sunday had come over from AA. And over half of those have come in the last 6 months. Right? And somebody who's not here today, I wouldn't want to embarrass somebody, but somebody came up and said, "Can I get a Bible?" "Sure, here's a Bible." I don't know how to find my way around the books." "Well, here's the books up front. There's an Old Testament and a New Testament." "What's the Old Testament? What's the New Testament?" I mean, it's happening, right? Somebody who never, a Thomas that would never have been in a church is in a church, digging in, bringing a fire, bringing enthusiasm, bringing a love of God. So, thank you.